Okay.
Welcome back. And I just want to go over one or two things real quickly here. When we were talking about Peter McCullough, we were just trying to reconcile two rather different statements. Now, we've been into this whole horrible COVID plan, and it's a plan, and it is not a vaccine. Please never think about it in those terms. It is not a vaccine. It wasn't designed, it wasn't created, it wasn't tested, it wasn't deployed to be a vaccine. End of story. And after 2 years, Dr. McCullough, who has been saying some extraordinarily remarkable things, especially early on, said now, it is now biologically plausible that the COVID vaccines are causing organ damage and death. Well, he might have made that statement at least a year ago or a year and a half ago, and yet it's a contemporary statement. So I'm not quite sure of what's going on. I think there's a lot of pressure on these doctors vis-a-vis their licenses. I know they don't want to lose their licenses. We don't want them to. But I'd like to see maybe a more consistent message, and I would like to see all of them drop the use of the word vaccine. It's wrong. It's just perpetuating, willingly or otherwise, the lie. It is a death weapon, period. So again, most all the things we've discussed are available in guests under our names. You can find them there, and they'll be up permanently as well. But right now, let's welcome Nurse Anne back on the program. Anne, are you there? Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Welcome back. Say hi to Erica.
Okay. Hello, Erica. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, Anne. How are you?
I'm good.
Well,
how goes the battle?
Yeah. Took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah. How are we doing?
I'm still a little bit sick, actually, myself, after been sick for about now three weeks, I think. And
really?
I was working in the hospital, and
yeah.
I was kind of like thinking, oh, it was a lot of stress related and working nights and stuff. I was getting headaches initially, but and I was kind of blowing it off as that, but then I got really sick, and I continue to be sick.
Well, we did send you some Allicin C, which helps most of the time, but I wonder if, because you are being dosed all the time at work with the spike protein, what else, Erica? What else can she be getting?
They've figured out that there's microRNAs that are being shed from the vaxxed people that may be impacting the unvaxxed in adverse ways.
Yeah. And I got the GI component as well, which they're calling, it's called now GI COVID.
Oh,
wow,
come on.
They've got a name for it.
There's gastrointestinal COVID, and we're seeing a lot of it.
Oh,
GI
boy.
COVID. Well, they got HIV COVID too, so I guess it's have fun with words. Although it's not fun to be sick. Now, the GI component would suggest, and I don't want to speak for Erica on this, but we've talked about it so much, would suggest a bacterial issue as well as possibly viral. Are you taking antibiotics other than the Allicin C?
Yeah, I actually did. I contacted the frontline doctors, and they gave me antibiotics as well as the antiviral because they felt I probably should be on both. So I took both. But continue to have a lot of the same issues.
How can it be that you work in a hospital and you have to ask frontline doctors for a prescription?
Well,
people are going to be wondering that.
That's a long story.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm sorry you're not 100%. We got to get you back up to where you want to be. I just wonder if Erica, she's being exposed, and I used to use the term often, there's a threshold at which you can operate at with, let's just say, spike protein, while your body's eradicating it. you can operate under a certain threshold, but when you get dosed and you go over that threshold, it begins to become too much for your innate immune system to handle. Do you think that that's a possibility, Anne?
I do believe that there's a strong possibility that that could be the case. But I will tell you, whatever it is, it's I would have viewed myself as very healthy, and I was definitely taking everything I needed to take to protect myself from any kind of exposures. So whatever this is definitely wreaking havoc with a lot of people's GI systems. And they're classically seeing people coming in with nausea. The fatigue is unreal. And I remember that happened to me too. I was like, okay, great. I work at night, but by the same token, I was never as chronically fatigued as I had been in the lead up to this. And then they're seeing nausea, loss of appetite, weight loss, and diarrhea. And for just so you know, all of the things I've mentioned, I've had.
Erica, how many people have we spoken to who have had literally no energy to do anything? They are virtually dead to the world, and they're in pain, and they're miserable. I mean, this is all over the place now.
Yeah, the fatigue does seem to be a defining feature of this latest whatever it is. Fatigue.
Yeah.
With the GI symptoms. And I can't help but think, I mean, these symptoms also mirror what's known as brucellosis.
Oh, my God.
I just wonder, are people being adequately diagnosed?
What did you say,
Anne? They're not testing for it. They're not testing for it. I will tell you that. But I actually am asking my doctor to do the test, and they're going to question me as to why I should ask that for that test. But I'm going to insist on it.
Yeah, you should, because there's many things that can cause these symptoms, and I think COVID is just too convenient.
So what do we have, an epidemic potentially of brucellosis?
Well, maybe the COVID, the spike protein is known to bind to the ACE2 receptors, of which you have many also in your gastrointestinal tract. And when it does that, it affects the microbiome in adverse ways so that the healthy bacteria don't produce the antibiotics that they normally do to keep the pathogenic bacteria in check. And so essentially you've got an explosion of pathogenic bacteria, because that ACE2 receptor is being dysregulated in the gut. I don't know if that's what it is, but that has been discussed.
And then again, we
have the bacteria themselves that may be infected and producing these hemotoxins
within
the gut that's entering the bloodstream.
And one quick question, and then I want to find out what you have to bring to the table tonight. This issue of fatigue, I cannot tell you how many times that we hear about it often. And one guy I know, he may be listening right now, he was so wiped out, and I talked to him several times before, and I didn't hear from him for about 15 days. And I got hold of him today, and it turns out he had gone into the hospital for 12 days and virtually has no recollection of any of it. He was that tired and wiped out. He just slept for 12 days. He didn't eat. I think he ate one time. Everybody's losing weight. Harry Cooper's lost 20 pounds. He is so tired of being tired, he's disgusted beyond measure. Now, I assume you are pushing yourself, even though you're fatigued, to go to work, knowing you as we do. You're a dedicated professional. Would you rather just stay home and sleep?
Well, in the lead up to when I got really sick, I was on the unit, and I was actually saying to the manager, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I just don't feel right. and this was the headaches was the first thing, and then but the fatigue was unbelievable. And I said if I didn't have to show up for work, I'd sleep for 24 hours a day, and I could do it, but no problem. So, and then the day when I was off work, the days and nights were rolling together. I didn't know what day of the week it was half the time, because I'd be like, I'd get up maybe for an hour, and then I'd do something, and then I'd have to go back to bed again, because I was just so fatigued all the time. And I have a bit more energy now, but it's because I'm in a routine where I'm forcing myself to go to bed and sleep. And a funny thing is when I talked to the frontline doctors, actually, they did actually suggest a couple of treatment regimes. And one of them was melatonin, and I said, well, I don't have a problem sleeping. And they go, but we're using it for other things other than just sleeping.
Well,
so they're
some
using
of those,
it as an off-label.
Yeah, some of those groups are pushing SSRIs, too, which is very
correct.
Odd.
Correct, but I said I was currently working, and I couldn't have anything that would impact my thinking processes and things like that. So the fatigue is chronic.
All right, for all of you out there who are sick, listen to Nurse Anne. She is getting better slowly. This is not a quick snapback for a lot of people. This is a fight. I'm amazed you've gone to work. What a tribute to your dedication. Incredible. Wow.
Yes. I went back to work because the hospital was basically during the time I was in quarantine. I should say this: I was in quarantine for 10 days. Halfway through that process, Anthony Fauci had come on the TV and said, "Oh, you don't need to no longer quarantine for 10 days. It's okay to quarantine for 5." So the hospital.
What did they try to tell you? You had COVID? Excuse me. What were you quarantined for?
So yeah, the frontline doctors had started seeing the gastrointestinal component of COVID, and and I had gone for the test, and I tested negative, but they felt that it was only a matter of time, and if I had gone back and did a second test, it would be positive. So they treated it as COVID at that time. So that's why they gave me the antibiotics plus the ivermectin at the time. And I took the Allicin C as well in addition to that. I did a lot of treatment regimes off-label. I did a lot of, things I did myself, like to keep my immune system strong. Like the vitamin D and vitamin C, I was taking a lot of extra doses of that, and selenium was another one I was taking.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of the medical regime, I was actually doing an awful lot more on my own to boost my immune system back up. But I was beaten down. It took me out, and I've never been as ill in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And did you say you took the antiviral they prescribed?
I took the antiviral as well. Yeah.
Do you know which one?
And now, yeah. Oh yeah. It was the ivermectin, the 3 milligram tablets, and you have to take a pretty strong course of that. I did read the side effects of that, of course, are potentially you're going to end up with abdominal discomfort and diarrhea and stuff like that. But even after finishing my course of ivermectin, it didn't matter. I still continue to have the problems I'm having. So, I also increased my probiotics. Like, I took double doses of the probiotics.
Good.
As well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very sorry that you're still fighting this. Let's put our heads all together and see if we can come up with something else you can take in addition to the 400 things you're already taking. Good grief.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you're amazing. All right. If we can, we had some material last hour. Were you able to listen last hour?
Yeah, I've been listening to the show. It's been a fascinating insight, and I can definitely bring a case to add to the particular topics you were talking about tonight.
Very good. Okay. One of the topics that is particularly concerning to all of us is the spending of taxpayers' money to give. It's like bounty money. They're just paying these hospitals incredible bonuses, up to $160,000 for one case of fatal COVID. And there's more. That's not all. It could be hundreds of thousands. We don't know. Here's this little quick video again. I'll play this very quickly to give you, who missed last hour, an idea of where your tax dollars are now being directed.
Hello, fact finders and truth seekers. This is Dr. Peterson Pierre with America's Frontline Doctors bringing you today's Frontline Flash. So the current situation is this. If you have COVID and you end up in the hospital, you're put on a rigid protocol and there's high mortality rate in the hospital and your family is kept in the dark as to what's happening. So what's going on here? Number one, the CARES Act is providing bonus payments to hospitals whenever you have a diagnosis of COVID. And then number two, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services is waiving patient rights. This is a deadly combination. So here's what happens. You get a payment because you offer a free COVID test in the emergency room. You get a boost payment if you have a diagnosis of COVID. Number three, you get another bonus payment if you are admitted with COVID. Number four, you get another bonus payment if you're put on remdesivir. Number five, another bonus payment if you're put on a mechanical ventilator. Number six, another 20% bonus if the diagnosis on your death certificate says COVID, even though you may not have died from COVID. And then number seven, there's bonus payments to coroners. Do you understand the gravity of what's happening right now? The Biden administration is literally paying hospitals to kill you. That's what's happening. This is terrible. We need to stop that. These are real human lives we're talking about. They're priceless. It's estimated at about $100,000 per patient is what the hospital is getting.
Okay, I've got $160,000 from another source. Be that as it may or may not, I suggest the total in some cases is probably $200,000-$300,000 easy. This is big money. This is the cancer industry reinvented.
Well, if they're in an ICU unit, it's easily $160,000.
There you go.
Because you're paying for the ICU bed on top of all of that.
Oh, yes. Paying for your bed, your room,
yeah.
Labs,
yeah.
Blood, all the rest of it.
Yeah. So it could definitely range in that ballpark.
Well, as Erica said weeks ago, we are also having a brand new cancer industry that's beginning to make itself quite obvious. These cancers that we're seeing are vicious, horrible cancers that have no mercy whatsoever on the patient because their immune systems are all but gone in many cases. What are you seeing by way of cancers in the hospital?
This is incredible, actually. I did actually come across a case a couple of nights ago, and she was only 55, actually. She was under 60 years of age, and she'd been fit. She was skinny, she was healthy, and she had no previous diagnosis of cancer. And she came into the hospital. What was crazy is she presented with, she was lethargic, and she was having fevers. And then when they did the blood work, they come to find out that she was also septic. So, and then
was she vaxxed, Anne? Excuse me, was she vaxxed?
Yeah, she was.
Okay.
Yeah, she had received all the Pfizer, and then she got the booster. and she'd gotten the booster about, I think it was only not even a week and a half prior to the whole, this whole thing going down. Yeah, I think it was a week and a half. And the other thing was she had a mammogram done 9 months before all the hospitalization. And the reason I bring this up is because when she came in, they diagnosed it as she was had COVID because she had pleural effusions bilateral, and then she had what looked like the COVID pneumonia. And of course, she ended up testing positive for COVID as well. But also, when they went to do the CT, they came to find out that she had cancer off her on her breast, on her left breast, and which wasn't there 9 months before. And then she was complaining of abdominal pain, and they thought maybe it was a gallbladder thing that was going on. So they did CT of the abdomen, and they saw inflammation of the gallbladder. But also it revealed she has cancer in her thoracic area of her spine and her lumbar and her pelvis. So all breast cancer and then thoracic and then lumbar and then her pelvic area. Yeah.
Erica?
Well, what brought her to the hospital? She was having trouble breathing?
She was very lethargic, and she was had been having fevers. She hadn't really had, she said she had shortness of breath, but she was sitting okay initially in the emergency room, but like she didn't need any assistive oxygen at that time. But the longer she was in the emergency room, she was getting sicker and sicker. And then ultimately she was requiring extra oxygen at that time. And then she just went downhill. I mean, the hospital was full. So she was in the emergency room for 3 days total.
Oh my gosh.
On a stretcher. Yeah. And so what's happening now is they have to hold them in the ER and treat them like they're on a unit. And they have nurses assigned to ER patients now that are, now basically as if they were on a COVID unit or in an ICU unit. So she was one of the patients that was down there for 3 days. But by the time she left the emergency room, she was already vented.
Wow.
Because she no longer could breathe on her own. So she's in the brought up and she's placed on medications to, because she's on the vent now, she's getting sedation. She's also getting, she was getting the, at that point, they had already started the remdesivir in the ER.
Oh, God.
Before they ever sent her up. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, incredible. God.
And then, and it just went from bad to worse. So she was up in the ICU, and then when they come to find out, to talk to the family about the gravity of her situation with the findings, they did biopsies as well. So the findings with the cancer, they were basically saying it's an extreme aggressive cancer. Her quality of life will it be non-existent with this type of cancer. She'll be in extreme pain because it's gone to the bone. Mm-hmm. And so they basically another day or two passed in the ICU, and then the family decided to make her comfort care. So she went through all of that treatment from the time she hit the ER doors to coming back up to the ICU and then ultimately going on comfort care. So now she was made comfort care, and palliative comes on the case. She's like getting massive amounts of IV pain medications now. She's no longer responsive. She wasn't anyway, because once they put her on the vent, she wouldn't be anyway.
Of course not.
Because of the sedation, yeah. So she's no longer responding to anything. The thing about it was is that prior to this, she was moving around. Prior to walking into the ER door, she was actually moving around. to my astonishment, I was very surprised. The family said she didn't really complain of a lot of pain. She had a little bit, but not much, which in light of what was going on in her body, you would have expected her to be in a lot of pain.
Explain, Anne, if you would please, just briefly, what comfort care means.
Okay, so once the decision is made that the quality of life is going to be pretty non-existent to the person, they no longer will come back to full functioning to where they were before they came to the hospital. What that means is they will now determine you are now going to be a DNR, which is do not resuscitate, or a DNI, which is do not intubate. And usually those go hand in hand with comfort care.
So it's assisted euthanasia is what it is. It's just taking her out.
If they're not dying from whatever brings them into the hospital, if they're very sick in the ICUs, which we are seeing a lot of, we're not getting any gains, where it's usually a discussion of palliative versus hospice care, and that means comfort care, and that's the route they'll go. If they don't pass away on their own, they'll end up, yes, I suppose you could say it that way, assisted.
Erica, you said months ago you expected a mass epidemic of cancer. And
yeah, yes. And that's what was known about this technology, this, you know, transfection mRNA technology. I mean, all of the animal studies, they developed cancer. Yes, we can transfect their cells and make them produce various proteins, and it looks real good, but they ultimately develop cancer. It dysregulates the physiology to a point where the body can't regulate itself. The immune system is so skewed and misperforming, dysregulated.
Oh, it's being destroyed. It's dying.
Yeah, the signaling pathways are just, they're not right. The feedback loops are messed up. The DNA repair mechanisms are messed up. These people are in a highly inflammatory state. I mean, these inflammatory cytokines drive cancer. Then we've got a low oxygen situation at the cellular level.
Are you doing D-dimer tests in the hospital routinely on these people? Are they all showing anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the D-dimers, D-dimers are usually coming positive at high levels, very high levels, for patients who are presenting with really severe shortness of breath, who are absolutely requiring oxygen. They're hitting the ER doors. The EMT is bringing them in on oxygen. They're probably even intubating them en route. So, and of course, they're finding then that there's clotting going at a macro and micro level. So you'll see it in, I've never seen anything like this, actually. I just never have in my lifetime. I've never seen where people actually have clotting in multiple parts of their body. You usually see it in just one part. Like it may start in a limb, like a leg or an arm or something, and it will stay there. But in this situation, we're seeing it in there's clots in the arm, the leg, in close to the heart, where they're actually requiring surgery sometimes for that one. Are it's too late. It's gone to the brain, and they've already had a stroke. And we have a lot of patients who are already stroked out by the time I'm seeing them.
And I'll bet that there are a lot of them, if you were to test for prions, would show prions too in the brain. I'm just guessing. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. All right. They're not checking for it, but probably.
These people. These people are literally
off the chain, though. They're like in the thousands, Jeff. Like the D-dimer levels, they shouldn't be reading these high. They shouldn't be reading in the thousands, and they are.
These people are literally dying before your eyes when they come into the hospital. Their immune systems are shutting down, if they're working at all. your job is to try to heal people. You mentioned that a couple times ago. This must be particularly heartbreaking just to see this and knowing these people are dying from a biological weapon that they willingly took. They didn't know. It's not their fault, but they're dying.
Right. Yeah, it's very, very hard to see it. And then for the patients that are still able to talk to me, that are, it's kind of a tough situation because the if they ask me to any questions, if there are other people in the room, I can't answer them honestly. And I struggle with that one personally. That's a personal struggle. Because I mean, every nurse will say it. Every nurse is saying it. They've never seen anything like this. We've never seen this level.
And they can't connect the dots. They can't figure out that these are vaxxed people and they're dying from this bioweapon that they're getting?
No, they're putting two and two together. But
I would hope.
But what you guys don't know is that the hospital recently the class action lawsuit the court systems basically overruled and now all healthcare workers are required now to get the
you're under mandate again.
Yes.
And what is your time limit?
So they hospital has we have till the February 24th. You are required to get the booster and the flu vaccine. The flu vaccine used to be one of those that was optional, but that's also now becoming a requirement. Also, a mandate.
This is mass murder. Mass murder.
Without question. Yeah.
You were in the neuro ICU. Unit.
Yes.
Strokes, brain bleeds.
Strokes, brain bleeds.
Clots.
Yeah, multiple clotting. MS. There's new cases of MS showing up. Multiple, that's
multiple sclerosis? That's what you're talking about? MS?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. And, there's one patient that's in there now, and it's very interesting. He came from a medical background himself, and he was a physical therapist, and he unfortunately he has interstitial lung disease, but he never got vaxxed. He refused to get the vaccination for COVID and or flu actually. And, of course, you know, he's been required to be on supplemental oxygen. He told me privately that he was working with a naturopath and that the naturopath had prescribed a number of alternate treatments that he can try. And he had his supply with him in the hospital. And, he basically was, he said that he was not going to take the vaccine. He doesn't know how many doctors have come in and told him that this is something he probably needed to do because of his diagnosis and that he was on high flow oxygen when I met him. But we've actually got him down now, actually to a nasal cannula. He's still requiring quite a bit of oxygen, but he is a very well-informed individual. He did test positive for the COVID. He ended up with COVID pneumonia. So he did indeed have it, but whatever.
He had bacterial or viral pneumonia.
Yeah.
Do we know?
He had the bacterial. Bacterial pneumonia.
Well, that doesn't necessarily have to be COVID then, does it?
No, but he was labeled that as having
of course.
COVID pneumonia.
Money. Erica, any questions about neuro ICU, or do we go to NICU next?
Yeah, I'm more curious as to what you're seeing in the newborn babies that are being hospitalized. I mean, well, I have heard some reports that there are actually neonates being diagnosed with cancer.
That is the case, yes.
Good
that is
God.
The case. Oh, no. Yeah, their cancers are primarily in the brain, but they're also seeing some of them in some cancers in the organs as well. The organs aren't very well developed either, but the cancer apparently is.
Wow.
So the cells of the cancer are doing better than the actual infant organs themselves.
Do we think they're being born with the cancer, or are they picking up after, or are they almost have to be born with it, wouldn't they?
I think they've been born with it. I think they are born with it. They're very emaciated too. They're just very, like, very restless infants. There's a lot of, they like cry a lot, you know?
They're in misery. I'm sure.
This is almost unspeakable.
It is unspeakable. That's a correct word. This is not human. It's not human behavior. And when one finally confronts the reality that this has all been done with intent, where does that leave us? What are we supposed to think about humankind? This is satanic.
On the other side of the coin, too, is the neonate unit was actually on one of the nights I happened to be there. We had to be on divert because our neonate unit was full, so we were actually airlifting kids and infants to other area hospitals because our neonate unit was full.
You're full.
Our ICUs are full. Our ERs are vaxxed people, right?
They're full of vaxxed people.
I would say probably 95%. It's very rare I meet an unvaxxed patient.
Let's rewind and go back 6 to 9 months when the majority of people seem to have gotten their first shot, and many have gotten 2 and 3 since then. What's coming home to roost now is a destroyed human physiology, a destroyed blood, circulatory, major organ, brain, you name it. And their immune system is at the foot of everything, and it's crumbling. These people are dying now en masse.
Yeah, I would agree. And the other thing that's happening, too, is they're coming in and people who would never have had any kidney issues before, they're coming in and they're having it's acute kidney injury because it's the first time the doctors are seeing it. So they diagnose an acute kidney injury, but they have to get dialysis. I mean, some people are getting those dialysis cats placed in the emergency room, and they're calling the dialysis nurses to come in to give them dialysis on that same night. Yeah.
Wow.
Right away.
And this is not being caused by remdesivir. So what we have here is another dynamic. Somehow these bioweapons are going after the kidneys now. Yes?
Yeah, they're definitely coming in presenting with kidney issues and kidney damage now. And that's without having gotten any treatment with remdesivir. Now, if they end up having to get remdesivir, well, game over, because that definitely plays havoc with the I think that we're going on our third year with COVID, and it was in the first year of COVID that I recognized it back then, that the people who were presenting with COVID back then were not getting any better when they were placed on the remdesivir. The only time I saw it change and we had some successful cases where I actually did back then in the first year see people leave our ICU and go to a lesser acute unit was when we were still able to use ivermectin as in IV form. But they were, again, few and far between cases, because there's a certain point where even that will not work for you either. If there's too many organs damaged, the ivermectin won't work either. It's kind of a game changer, but now, I mean, it's not even in our hospital. We don't have it.
So your hospital is full of vaxxed, sick, and dying people. Are you seeing anybody get any better, make a recovery?
I have never seen anybody getting discharged from the hospital. No, not in this hospital. No, I saw it in my previous hospital I worked in, but not here.
Wow, Erica.
I'm not surprised. I mean, this is sanctioned murder, essentially.
It's what we said it was a year ago, and it's coming to pass. This is a growing tsunami of death, is what it is.
I don't think there is any recovery from these shots. Once things start to fail, I mean, it's so systemic. Where do you start?
It's what the CCP said, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was the thing, years ago, Erica, when I was working in ICU back in another state, when we had patients that were in multi-system organ failure, I mean, the odds of getting out of the ICU unit were probably 1%, maybe 1% if you're really lucky. And that was because that person would have been very sick with so many actual given diagnoses at that stage that their body just started shutting down. But these are people, I'm talking about people, the one I told you about the cancer, she was 55 years of age and healthy. She was healthy. She didn't have any prior history. And then the other ones I'm seeing, they were all mid-50s, late-50s. The oldest patient I had was 60 years of age.
That's incredible. Now, and what are they putting on their death certificates?
Coming in, if they get the diagnosis of COVID and they pass away in our hospital, the diagnosis for cause of death is COVID.
Okay.
It follows admission.
Lies. Everywhere is lies now. Everywhere is lies.
The biggest problem I have with the whole thing is that the physicians have the capability of letting the patients know, and they choose not to.
Give me an example. Know what?
If in the scenario with the COVID patient that's still able to talk when they come through the emergency room.
Yes.
But they're short, presenting like with their very short of breath, and they're needing additional oxygen. Well, they inevitably gravitate to needing higher oxygen needs, and they'll go to the high flow oxygen, and then they'll finally go to the BiPAP. Now, when you're on that BiPAP machine, there's nowhere else to go other than to go. If you can't keep your oxygenation leveled up, you're going to be vented. The thing about it is that before they go to that level, usually you're starting to see a breakdown of other systems happening, and you start seeing like the liver functions are getting elevated, and we're treating them with multiple doses of antibiotics. And by the way, there's never any probiotic given. I've yet to see a physician order a probiotic on any of these patients, and they're hitting them with mega doses of antibacterial.
So they're wiping out. The average person has around
good. Yeah.
7 pounds of good, healthy microbiome biology in their digestive tract, which they depend upon to break down food and deliver the nutrition to the body, and it's not happening. There's no more bacteria in there, friendly bacteria, functional bacteria, and there's no probiotics being given. these people, their families aren't allowed to see them. They go in there and they die. I am appalled. God bless you for being able to go in there and work and do what you do. I don't know how you do it. And yet here we have a country, and where are the people? And where are the people standing up and complaining about this? This is known now. What we're talking about is known, certainly on this program and others. It's known.
And of course,
no one is doing anything about
it. As well, because of their guts are being taken out. Yeah.
Say that again, please.
I've never cleaned so much poop up in a week like I did last week.
Gosh.
C. diff, did you say?
And I had my own issues. It's just terrible, you know? It's just been one of those, they wipe the gut out and you've got nothing left.
Understood.
So then, and then of course, then you have, they're hitting them with the antibacterials, and then if they are not getting better on the BiPAP, and this is where the doctors can say we can keep on trying them on the BiPAP, but they don't. They always push that next step, you may have to get vented. You may have to be intubated and put on the vent. And at that stage, their kidneys are already failing. And I'll tell you for a fact that once you introduce that remdesivir, game over, because your kidneys are shot. That takes the kidneys up right away.
Okay, let's try and do this. Someone is not feeling well at home. Would you advise them to stay away from the hospital for as long as humanly possible? What would you advise people who are sick? They don't know what they have. Mm. Yeah, I want tests. I need tests. I got to go to the hospital. Mm. What would you tell them?
Well, I would definitely say stay away from the hospital. Stay away from ERs and urgent cares, because all of the people that are in there, that's the other, you're, if you want to go to an urgent care where I am right now, you're going to be sitting for probably the average 3 hours in a room filled with a whole lot of other people that have, that are possibly shedding or
of course,
spreading something else on you. So
yeah,
I would say, yeah, absolutely. The last thing you need to go is don't go there. But if you're starting to feel sick and worn down, and the fatigue was the thing I noticed. The headache and the fatigue was the first thing that really hit me. The other stuff came much later. I wish I had known what I earlier, but I hadn't put it together yet.
Other people have. I'm sorry for interrupting. You seem to have what so many other people have. This terrible, terrible fatigue. Go ahead, please.
But it presented like that initially, the headaches and the fatigue, and then later on came the other stuff. So, like the GI issues. And so my advice would be not to go to an urgent care or an ER. You're wasting your time. Now, the doctors are doing telemedicine, kind of like over the phone, where they'll call you and they'll do like a telehealth call, and they can call all your prescriptions into your pharmacies and stuff like that, anything you need. And they can, if it's bacterial in nature, they can get you right on the antibiotics. Now, I don't know about if the doctors are willing to prescribe, all doctors are willing to prescribe ivermectin, but ivermectin is still available. And people can still get it, so they should try it. But outside of that, they should be taking all of their vitamins, and vitamin D, and selenium, and zinc. And as soon as they start getting sick, they should almost nearly be double dosing on those things. All of that other stuff they should be doing.
Quercetin, bromelain, NAC, there's a long
NAC.
List of them.
Allison C, if you can get on it before it becomes full-blown, you can prevent yourself from going into the hospital. And when I was sick and I was talking to the doctor, he goes, it sounds like you might have to go because if this continues. And I was like, there'll never be a day. I said, hell will freeze over before I go to the hospital.
Wow.
So, as a patient. So.
Erica?
Yeah, well, I commend you. You're a trooper, Anne.
I'm hanging in there, but the thing is, yeah. The other side of the coin is our whole, like the whole hospital. I work in a very big hospital. There was nurses that were taken out. I mean, they lost so much. The staff ended up getting so sick in a short period of time, over two to three weeks. And so today I just saw that upstate New York and New York City will probably have to have military medical teams come in.
The hospitals are beginning to, they're going to fail without military intervention, so to speak. Anne, we have to run. We're running late. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for being a credit to your profession beyond that. Very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Thank you. It's nice talking to you both.
Okay.
Yeah, you too. Thank you again.
Oh, all right. We've got to run. We're running a little late. Say goodnight, Erica, and wow.
Okay. Good night, everyone.